Hello, and welcome to the inaugural episode of a new podcast, Slut PhD. I am your host, Julie Fennell, and the PhD and the title is not just a joke. I do, in fact, have a PhD in sociology, which is my profession, along with being a writer. I will draw extensively from my professional studies of sex, sexuality, and gender for this podcast, as well as from my personal experiences and observations as a practicing polyamorist, kinkster, as well as a pansexual woman. We will cover throughout our journey together in these episodes many topics pertaining to each of those areas of interest, as well as probably a few other things thrown in. This podcast is exclusively intended for people who are legal adults in the area where they are listening to from. And if you, like me, are in America, that means that I expect that you are 18 years of age or older. This podcast will contain graphic language and explicit content. However, I will post trigger warnings on any podcast episodes that are likely to be triggering for people listening to them. There are no trigger warnings for today's episode, which is about jealousy in polyamorous relationships. Although certainly that's a topic that maybe has some serious heartfelt feelings for some of you listening. I wanted to begin with this topic because I get a lot of questions about it when I teach and talk to people, and I think it is probably the most misunderstood thing about polyamorous relationships. Additionally, I just completed my first full, real edited novel, which is an erotic novel about two characters in a polyamorous relationship. And they don't actually end up dealing with feelings of jealousy very much in the book. But it occurred to me that if someone was reading that who didn't really know much about poly, their response to it might be, "This seems very unrealistic. Most people must just be going crazy with jealousy in these relationships. How is this not just something that everyone is losing their minds about all the time?" And it really encouraged me to want to make a podcast episode about this topic. Additionally, I was frustrated by an Instagram meme that I saw recently that someone had posted that said something to the effect of, "I always thought that polyamorous people were just super heroes who didn't get jealous at all, and now I realize that they're normal people who just talk through all of their feelings and have to work through their insecurities a lot." And I actually had a number of friends who are pretty much all in the BDSM scene and all practicing polyamorous themselves who had reposted this, and I thought it was very problematic for a variety of reasons and really speaks to some of the conflicts that I see in polyamorous communities as well as changing values among polyamorous people. But before I get any further into this topic, I want to begin by briefly outlining some of the distinctions around terms that might be ambiguous or unfamiliar to you. So broadly speaking, there is a large umbrella of relationship styles that we refer to as ethical non-monogamy, ENM, is usually what sociologists would call the emic term, which is to say the term used by the people in the community who practice it. Ironically, most of the people studying it still use a term CNM for consensual non-monogamy, which gets very confusing if you are one of the few people like me who both study and practice this. Ethical non-monogamy includes a wide variety of relationship practices, but basically assumes that you have multiple romantic and or sexual partners who are at least in theory all aware of one another. No one thinks that you are being exclusive with them, and presumably also to some degree are being pretty open about it. I'll try to put a link to a great diagram that someone famously posted about a huge map of various styles of non-monogamy, which I love and is very well known within the community, graphing out a variety of different relationship styles that moves everything from, we call don't ask, don't tell polyamory, which is arrangements where you've agreed to be polyamorous with your partner, but have also agreed to tell each other basically nothing about what you're doing with other people. Sometimes people in those types of arrangements have some explicit policies like, well, we don't use condoms together, but anyone else that you're with, you have to use condoms. And other than that, you know, I just trust you to be safe and I don't want to hear any of the details. That's a pretty extreme version and rarely gets counted among or core community polyamorous to define themselves as being poly, although some of those people do describe themselves as poly. I would tend to label that relationship style more as quote unquote open. Open often covers all manner of sins that means that you have some sort of relationship style that allows you to have sex with other people, but expecting that you aren't really going to form serious relationships or attachments with anyone other than your anchor partner or your primary partner. Usually people in those types of relationship styles aren't even using that kind of language. They're usually just saying other than, you know, my boyfriend or my husband. And then it also encompasses people who are engaging in somewhat more nebulous arrangements, like people who have long distance policies, right? Where we're more than 100 miles apart, it doesn't count. Or like we go to conventions and it doesn't count. These people I would actually tend to refer to as monogamish. So most of the time they're monogamous, but maybe a couple of days a year they're not. These are people who also like legitimately engage in like hall pass type arrangements, right? Where like sometimes you are allowed to have sex with other people under very specific circumstances or with very specific people under very specific circumstances. Again, I tend to exclude people in those kinds of arrangements from being part of this core of polyamory, which is people, specifically people who expect to engage in multiple romantic relationships in addition to engaging in multiple sexual relationships. Although the addition there is complicated because it's quite common for people who are ace, more broadly known as asexual, to identify as polyamorous. And so plenty of people who are romantic, perhaps, engage in polyamory without engaging in the sex part. Also complicated by the fact that it's quite common for people who identify as aromantic to engage in polysexual relationships. And no, I am not using that term the way that it is presently defined. I'm using it the way that I think it should be defined, which is to say people who engage in multiple consensual sexual partnerships that may or may not be romantic in nature. So I'm speaking broadly here. Certainly plenty of people in ace communities are participating in broader poly communities. And so this is a broad generalization when I talk about like romantic and sexual partnerships. But generally speaking, the core of polyamorous communities have traditionally been formed by people who are engaging in both romantic and sexual partnerships with multiple people. Also, historically, polyamory has largely been practiced by bisexual, pansexual, queer women, predominantly, historically. Again, historically. And largely relatively straight and sometimes bisexual men. Polyamory is strangely uncommon still to this day in gay male communities, in spite of the fact that gay men are extremely non-monogamous overall, but still the idea of engaging in multiple relationships is fairly uncommon in gay men's communities outside of the bear subculture specifically, typically, which I find very interesting. Still not terribly popular among lesbians. Even most of the women who are in long-term relationships with women I meet who do this still often identify as bisexual, even if mostly partner with other women, which also pretty interesting from a sociological standpoint. Anyway, polyamory is usually relatively serious in terms of the relationships that are expected to be formed, sometimes up to and including like we all live together in one big house, or we all, you know, are in a relationship with one another, which, you know, might be called like a triad or a quad, depending. So you have multiple people who are all practicing relationships with one another. I would say overall, to the best of my knowledge, which there are no authoritative statistics to be had on this subject, the most common form of polyamory is what is generally referred to as hierarchical polyamory, which is to say that you have a single relationship set. So, you know, like a husband and a wife. And then each of them also has other partners, which are usually not assumed to be quite as important as that core relationship. And then you may also have people further down from that. So the term that gets used a lot for that is a secondary relationship or a tertiary relationship. I will say that one of the complications in talking about this topic over time has become that in polyamorous communities, and particularly in the BDSM subculture, which is where I spend most of my time and where I think the majority of social polyamory happens these days. There used to be polyamorous conventions, but they've, I think, declined considerably over time. That in this core polyamorous community, the idea of hierarchical polyamory has become much more stigmatized, looked down on. Yeah, there's like people are increasingly reluctant to identify themselves as hierarchical polyamorists. This is extremely relevant for our discussion of jealousy, which is part of why I need to spend a little bit of time talking about this at the outset. So as it has become increasingly uncool to label oneself a hierarchical polyamorist, there's a complementary impulse to try to insist that all of one's relationships are to some degree equal, which is a very, very tricky notion to define or practice. And the complementary, or I should say more competing idea that has become more of an ideal within a lot of polyamorous communities has become anarchical polyamory, which is related to the term relationship anarchy. Anarchical polyamory depends heavily on a concept of everybody doing relationships in a broader way. And so you end up with these sets of relationships that oftentimes are fairly unstable and constantly shifting. You'll encounter anarchical poly people who oftentimes rather casually will use the term partner in contrast to the way the term tends to be understood outside the subculture, where, you know, partners, generally assumed to be like a same-sex live-in partner. This is a term that gets used among anarchical poly people, again, to cover a wide range of relationship types, so that they don't have to label someone, oh, this is my boyfriend, or this is my girlfriend, and say, ah, this is my partner. And it helps to like smooth over some of that complexity and that anxiety sometimes. The reality, the lived reality, is that for people who want to live with a partner in a, you know, more conventional type of relationship setting, especially one where they want kids, it can be extremely difficult to maintain any sort of purely anarchical polyamorous ideal. And once you start to settle down with somebody or somebodies, your life starts to look increasingly hierarchical, whether you want it to or not. And a lot of the polyamorous community has really struggled with this reality. And especially, I think a lot of times it becomes a bit of a contrast between young millennials and Gen Z folks and older, who have a pretty big gap in terms of how likely they are to be cohabiting with a partner. And this creates competing expectations and also competing ideals in terms of what it is that people are looking for and what they think is okay. It certainly is possible to live in a hybrid type of dynamic there, where maybe you have an anchor partner, which is the term that anarchical poly folks tend to prefer over these like more hierarchical labels like husband or, cohabiting partner, or whatever, that you have an anchor partner, and then your other relationships tend to be much more like aiming towards greater egalitarianism and also more fluidity. The other reality of anarchical poly is that it tends to be pretty unstable. It's doesn't have a lot of the supports that allow you to hold on to a relationship indefinitely. There's not a lot of security. There's not a lot of deep set, like pragmatic attachments that hold people together, right? So the types of pragmatic attachments that often hold a relationship together include things like sharing a living space, especially if you actually buy a house together, having children together, sharing a bank account together, sharing a business together. All of these things create tight bonds between people that mean that just because you had a big argument, you have a pretty big motivation to try to fix things up with this person. And without those types of ties, relationships tend to, statistically speaking, and I think you can see in your anyone anywhere around your own social life, become a lot more fragile. It's a lot easier to leave somebody when you don't have any reason that you have to stay with them or even need to. And in fact, I would say that a lot of anarchical poly is founded upon a relationship anarchy ideal that says it's better if you don't need to be in a relationship, that you're only in the relationship because you want to be there. Sociologist Anthony Giddens refers to this philosophy as a pure relationship, meaning a relationship for a relationship's sake. And so he argues that postmodern culture, developed countries are aspiring more and more towards relationships where people are there because they want to be in the relationship and not because they have to be because of familial expectations or burdens or because of economic expectations. I think you can also see some of the philosophical contrast increasingly between hierarchical tending versus anarchical tending folks in the kinds of people who wear wedding rings, have engagement rings, take on a partner's last name, have children or expect to have children. There's a variety of symbolic gestures, I think, that will emphasize a particular type of anchor partnership that say to both the partners and to everyone nearby, hey, this is my person. And everyone else is maybe never going to really be quite as much to me as this person is. And sometimes that's fine with everybody involved, and sometimes it's not. So I could probably go on at further length trying to list out the different types of polyamory, but for the moment I'm going to leave it there and just start changing over to talk more about jealousy. Although I should say one more thing, which is that I think in the future, we're not going to label ourselves so broadly. I think as consensual non-monogamy becomes increasingly popular, that we'll come back and realize that right now we're all labeling ourselves poly for convenience sake, but eventually we're going to realize that we are thrown together in a lot of different preferences. And consequently, it becomes easy for us to be partnered with people who want really different things. We said we were both poly, but reality was that you were anarchical poly and I was hierarchical poly, and we didn't understand how that would affect our emotional entanglement and our states of emotional distress with one another. And again, I think this is a huge impact on the way that we end up processing and understanding jealousy in polyamorous relationships. But let's talk about jealousy specifically. So I have looked at a lot of different psychologist claims about the universal emotions, and as far as I can tell, this research is pretty frickin' ambivalent. On the one hand, it's pretty secure in naming certain emotions, but it's also extremely uncertain about naming others. And it's unclear to me, based on these studies, the degree to which one can securely argue that jealousy is, in fact, a universal human emotion. When I look at, I'm looking at a graphic right now that's a Plutchik's Wheel of Emotions, which has as its core ecstasy, admiration, terror, amazement, grief, loathing, rage, and vigilance. And nowhere on this wheel, it extends out considerably, does it mention either jealousy or envy. However, if I go to Wikipedia, it says that some researchers say that jealousy is seen in all cultures and in a universal trait, but others claim that it is a culture-specific emotion. Who has the right answer? I don't know. It is not actually my area of expertise, but I can tell you that I do not personally understand jealousy. And I, from the age of 5, I thought that monogamy was stupid and I never intended to do it myself. And I was deeply perplexed by the idea that anyone would ever want to. So I certainly feel like for myself, jealousy was absolutely not an emotion that I understood or experienced. Moreover, the vast majority of people who I have personally dated and been in serious romantic relationships with across my life have largely said the same thing. I have only dated polyamorously, and I did that quite intentionally because I always identified, I didn't have a word for polyamorous back then, which only became a popular term by the late 90s when I was graduating from high school and certainly not aware of it at that point. But I always identified as non-monogamous, and so I only dated people who were also non-monogamous. And I will say that pretty much everyone that I've dated, I feel like fell into the same camp of like, what, jealousy? I don't really know what that means. Someone told me I was supposed to feel that way, but it just sounded like it didn't make much sense. It's also important to contextualize this around polyamory historically and its development. So I've been hanging out with poly people a fair bit since about 2005. And I actually personally know quite a number of people who are what I would describe as Generation One polyamorists. So there's a whole history there that I don't want to go into too far. But I basically, as far as I can tell, early polyamorists like me tended to, and by early polyamorist, I want to make sure I clarify, like people who came about after the term polyamory was invented and who were practicing something descended from that which was named by the people who created it, who was Oberon and Morning Glory Zell Ravenheart. Obviously, people have been engaging in consensual non-monogamy and also especially non-consensual non-monogamy, but consensual non-monogamy for many, many years, documented a long time, and I'm actually considering doing an episode entirely on polyamory and like unsung bisexual and polyamorous historical figures. But we'll go back to that sometime. For today, let's just say that relatively early on, which is to say 20-ish years ago, polyamory as a culture tended to emphasize much more the idea that polyamorists were born, not made. In those early days, people were like me saying, oh, I always thought that jealousy didn't make sense, and I always thought that polyamory sounded like the way to go, and I didn't really understand why people were telling me differently. And there was this general sense, I think, that like, we were made a little bit differently. This was a sexual orientation. We came out this way. And sure, like, we were affected by socialization and talking with other people who did this, but, like, ultimately this came from sort of an impulse of ourselves. Over time, especially as the polyamorous culture, I think, got eaten by the BDSM subculture, that, in America at least, that ideology started to dwindle somewhat. And in its place came this idea that anybody could be polyamorous if you tried hard and talked a lot. And increasingly, in a fairly short period of time too, so by the time I was doing initial interviews in the BDSM subculture in 2012, I already was hearing a lot of this ideology of, oh, well, you just talk about it a lot, right? Like, just talk about your feelings. Someone told me, for example, like, you have to have a fetish for communication in order to be a successfully polyamorist. That like, it's just basically, if you talk about your feelings enough, then you won't have to worry too much about jealousy. And I was a little puzzled by that because I was like, why, how have we witnessed this change from a culture that says, ah, you know, you just are born this way, to one where increasingly people are saying, oh, but anybody can do this if you just try hard. BDSM subculture has a lot of good reasons for promoting that mentality, I think, which include the idea that the BDSM subculture needs people to be polyamorous in order to continue to participate. And so you can get way more people recruited if you say, oh, this isn't just something that you're born with. But also, I think it just turned out to be true, right? Quite a lot of people could, in fact, be poly if they tried hard and believed in themselves. And so it wasn't just something that you were born with. However, I will say that I think that the types of polyamory that people do who were kind of born this way versus the types of polyamory that people do who were encouraged into this, let's say, either, you know, sometimes kicking and screaming or sometimes with great enthusiasm, tend to be quite different. And again, I think this becomes a source of conflict when we talk about jealousy. So in what way? I think that there are, in fact, some people like me, I'm sitting here talking to you, who were born largely without this emotion of jealousy. Maybe this is just because of my particular neurospicy that I forgot to put this emotion into me, but I don't get it. And I have barely ever experienced it. And the closest thing I've ever really come is envy, which a lot of polyamorous people tell me is a distinct emotion. I'm not quite sure how much I believe that. But for those of you who subscribe to this philosophy, I will say jealousy is the idea of feeling upset because you can't have what's mine. And envy is a feeling of upset because I want that thing too. So for a concrete example, it's like, well, you know, my husband is really happy out on a date with this other woman. And instead of feeling jealous, which is to say I'm upset that she gets something that he has, I am envious that like maybe he's happy with some, that he gets to go on a date and I want to go on a date too, right? Like they're going to play mini golf together. Well, I like to play mini golf too. And now I don't get to go play mini golf because playing mini golf by myself is boring. And so this is the distinction that some people draw between jealousy versus envy. And I remember pretty early on, actually, when I was just starting to be polyamorous, having a conversation with one of my best friends in grad school, who's decidedly not poly. And she was very confused. And I was like, oh, I don't really understand any of this. I was like, what, you know, if I was going to be jealous, I feel like I'd be more jealous about my husband, like having dinner with somebody else than I would about him having sex with somebody else. So like, you know, if he's having dinner with somebody else, he's like having this potentially like serious emotional connection with them. Whereas if he's having sex, like whatever, that could be nothing. And she was very confused. I don't actually really get very jealous about either one, but I have had flickerings of this emotion, so I know that it exists in me, but not much. However, I have met plenty of people who are clearly very polyamorous by nature and inclination who do experience jealousy. And I have found, as I have continued talking with people, and I've spent many, many, many hours in my life playing a non-professional relationship therapist to people, I've found that the types of people who tend to be successful in polyamorous relationships as a person who is pretty jealous usually do so if they have an anchor partner who is also naturally jealous. By contrast, people who are not naturally jealous typically need to have anchor partners who are also not naturally jealous. And let me explain more about why. Because I think this is quite counterintuitive. I think a lot of us initially assume you're like, oh, well, if you have one jealous person, you want them to be partnered with the person who isn't jealous, and that's going to cause less conflict. The reality is that actually you get far more conflict by having these two people together than if they have the same emotional range and experience. If both people are naturally jealous, then they understand the types of experiences and feelings in one another, and they're able to respect each other's emotional experiences. If I am a naturally jealous person, when I'm in an anchor partnership with someone else who is naturally jealous, I have a pretty good sense of the types of things that are going to make them upset. I know how to not make them mad because I can look in my own self and see what makes me mad and apply accordingly. I have more empathy if I also am a naturally jealous person. By contrast, if I am not a naturally jealous person in a relationship with somebody who is naturally jealous, I'm constantly messing up because I don't know what things bother them. I'm constantly stepping on all of these minds around them, and I don't understand how to stop doing that. Worse, when I do, I end up inevitably getting into arguments with them in which I utter these terrible words. But that's just jealousy. Because part of the problem is that in polyculture, to some degree, people who don't get jealous tend to think that they are, in fact, superior to people who do. I am not going to in any way support this philosophy. However, it inevitably shows up in an argument. In a bad moment, you as the person who don't get jealous just condescend or look pityingly at the person who does, as if you think they could just get over it if they tried hard. And it just doesn't always work that way, right? Like, I think it's not that simple. And you end up in these really bad arguments that don't get easily resolved because it's very hard for you to respect your partner's feelings and emotions. It's just not something that you feel, so you just don't understand where they're coming from. So you get into these messy conflicts on that. But additionally, and I think this maybe even is the bigger kicker here, if you are a naturally jealous person, jealousy is a sign of affection and love. You understand it on some level as being a positive emotion. It may cause you stress. It may be stressful for your partner. But it still means for you that something is fundamentally right. It means that you value this person. It means that you value this relationship. It means that something is going well. If you are a not naturally jealous person, on the other hand, typically you experience jealousy as being a deeply negative and problematic emotion. The few times in my life when I've ever experienced jealousy, it was a terrible moment for me. It was literally one of the worst feelings I can imagine. I would do anything to not feel this way. And so, like, I find it to be a tremendously unnatural and negative experience that for me means something is very, 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 very wrong in a relationship. And it's so problematic for me that, like, honestly, feeling it at all, I have to fight the impulse to just immediately break up with someone. Because, like, this for me means that they've done something really bad. They have left me feeling so fundamentally insecure in our relationship and uncertain about their affection for me that they have left me feeling jealous. And this is really basic in terms of this whole idea of just communicate more, right? Is part of, but going back to like that Instagram meme, you know, you just talked through your insecurities and worked on them and stuff. And yes, there is some of that. But really, there are quite a lot of poly people who just don't get jealous to start with. And so they're not doing all that work, which means that they're also not respecting their partner for doing all that work. But even worse than that is the fact that jealousy fundamentally means something different to a naturally jealous and a not naturally jealous person. And regardless of what the overall poly culture tells you, and I think at this day and age, you tend to really get an increasingly mixed message on this one. If you are a naturally jealous person, jealousy means that something is going well. If you're a not naturally jealous person and you get jealous, it means that something is going wrong. And so these feelings just don't mean the same thing. And so if your partner feels jealous, like, you completely misunderstand that experience for them. It's a negative emotion for you, but it's a positive emotion for them. And so both of you are just very, or vice versa, right? And so both of you are very confused about what this is. On top of that, and this is real bad, right? If you are a naturally jealous person who experiences jealousy as a positive emotion, and you were the not naturally jealous person, and now they're jealous, on some level, you as the naturally jealous person, like, kind of understand their jealousy as a sign of appreciation and, like, positive affection. But the not naturally jealous person, meanwhile, is experiencing this as, like, a deeply negative thing and a sign that something is very wrong in the relationship. You're having completely different emotional context happening in the same place at the same time. And it's really hard to talk through that. Like, with a great deal of determination, you can try, but it is very, very difficult. This is doing poly on hard mode if you are a naturally jealous person in an anchor partnership with a not naturally jealous person. But let's talk some now about the way that jealousy intersects with those different styles of polyamory that I was talking about earlier. Let's say that you are instinctively an anarchical poly person in relationships with hierarchical poly people. You may find that you end up feeling jealous in those types of arrangements, especially if you're not clear about what your expectations are, because they have a negotiated arrangement with somebody and they have a maybe poorly negotiated arrangement with you, and you are left feeling like kind of crap about it. I will say that frequently you can create relatively stable and emotionally secure situations when you have a hierarchical poly person who has a stable anchor partner, and then they date an anarchical poly person. Like, in fact, that can be pretty stable. But if you have a hierarchical poly person who doesn't have an anchor partner, and they're trying to be in a relationship with an anarchical poly person, things can get real messy real fast, because that hierarchical poly person has a deep unmet need, right? Like, where they kind of want this anarchical poly person potentially to fill that for them. And inevitably, they're going to get really anxious and insecure, and often that's really going to feed a lot of jealousy for them, even if they're not naturally a jealous person, because they have this deep unmet need that the other person isn't really filling for them. Additionally, I think a lot of times you end up in these hierarchical poly situations where, say, somebody is stuck as a secondary or tertiary partner, and they don't have an anchor partner themselves, and they're with a person who does, right? Like, that oftentimes feeds into your feelings of jealousy as well. Those are easier to talk through as long as somebody actually has the feels like they have real opportunities to date and find other partners. But that can be like a real challenge. But I guess the last question that people always want to know is like, well, how do I deal with this? And I wish that I had more insight to offer on this, but as somebody who doesn't really get jealous in relationships with people who also don't really get jealous, I don't really have a lot of experience with it. And I actually find jealousy to be such a negative emotion that, generally speaking, if I sense that anybody I am like in the process of dating is inclined towards jealousy, I tend to flee. I have a very, very low cope level for jealousy. And so I don't have a lot of personal experience with it, which makes my next piece of advice of, well, you should be open and honest, really perverse coming from me, right? Because I'm like, oh yeah, well, if you tell me that you're feeling jealous, chances are I'm going to flee. I mean, the reality is that I'm not necessarily, right? Because I appreciate openness and honesty as much as any person in a healthy relationship does. But the truth is that it can be really hard, right? There's no simple thing for this. You often have to really lay out some careful ground rules. But the other problem with laying out careful ground rules is that people become tempted to lay out ground rules that are easy to break. And one of my fundamental pieces of advice in poly life is always never make rules that are easy to break, because you're basically just giving yourself a reason to be mad at somebody or to break up with them. So, you know, try to focus on making rules that really address the issues that you care about and that aren't merely symbolic gestures. But as you try to lay out some of these boundaries and ground rules for yourself and your partner, right, you really want to be clear what it is that is the emotions that are backing all of that up. Like, why are you doing this? What are the things that matter to you? How do you feel about the way that you have currently set up your relationship set? And what are you both ultimately trying to get out of this? And ultimately, I think that as long as you are in really compatible relationships with people who match you well in terms of your own desires for polyamory, that you are much less likely to create and encounter jealousy for yourself. So my husband and I, for example, always wanted to engage in what I refer to as train station polyamory, which is to say that we have a big house and people come and stay in it all the time. We have a lot of different relationships, but at the end of the day, a lot of times it really doesn't matter if we're sleeping with people or we're just friends with them or we're just engaging in BDSM play with them or whatever, right? They're just people who come through our house, and we're both very flexible and open about sharing our space and sharing our time. And we like having other people in our lives in a pretty profound way. We don't like the kind of relationship that's like, well, it's just the two of us and that's all that really matters. But some people have that kind of relationship, and that's really valuable and important to them. And I occasionally have dated other people with whom I have that kind of relationship, but it was, you know, by necessity somewhat smaller. But the point is that if you can agree on the fundamental structure and dynamic of your relationship, and you're both on the same page and you both have basically the same goals, that alone itself is the thing that's going to prevent jealousy. And jealousy is much easier to prevent than it is to deal with when it shows up. The more you can talk through the types of situations and dynamics that are likely to make you jealous and try to create a realistic set of situations that are likely to not make that happen, the happier and more successful your relationship will be. I will say with regards to jealousy that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. But what you do when it comes up is you do your damnedest to be respectful to the other person, to figure out where they're coming from. And then if you're dealing with somebody who is not naturally jealous, to address the underlying insecurities. Because if you're talking to somebody who isn't naturally jealous and they are now jealous, typically that means that there is an unmet relationship need or there's something that is driving their anxiety and insecurity. And so your conversation becomes focused on, what do I do to try to make you feel more secure? If that thing is solvable, then you try to do that. If it is unsolvable, well, you have a trickier issue at hand. It's easier to solve those types of things for people who are not naturally jealous. for people who are naturally jealous, your problem solving is way more focused on like, hey, the fact that you're jealous means that there's something that's going right about our relationship, but it also means that there's something that we need to do a little bit differently. What do we need to do a little bit differently so that we're not both feeling bad? And also, ultimately, if you are both naturally jealous people, to determine the degree to which this is a problem or not, right? Like, if you are both naturally jealous people and you feel jealous, then maybe that's not even something that you necessarily need to talk over with your partner. Maybe that's something that you need to just go play a video game about. Being honest with your person, however, if you're both naturally jealous, can leave you both feeling like this is an expression of desire, right? And so, maybe the fact that you're feeling jealous just means that you need to go have sex about it. Totally depends on your own relationship, but figuring out what is causing the jealousy, what it means in the context of your relationship, what it means in the context of your own emotional context is crucial to figuring out how you want to deal with it in your current relationship. So, thank you very much for listening to my first episode. In my next episode, I'm going to be talking about attachment issues and the misunderstandings that I think have arisen around the idea of disorganized attachment. If you enjoy my podcast, I hope that you will go and buy one of my two books that are currently available. I have a book published in 2022 on the BDSM scene called Please Scream Quietly, A Story of Kink. And in July of 2024, I published a book on sexual assault called Violated, Sexual Consent and Assault in the 21st Century. Thanks so much for listening, and I look forward to hearing your comments and feedback.